Hello and welcome to the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast in the Inner Sanctum. And again, those of you who are listening to the other podcasts we post every week will know that the poem of the week is what it is. I select the revisiting old favourites we have for the last, last 45 weeks. Heaven help us. Been on the path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc, trying to get to Rome on foot with him. Although we're doing it the slightly easy way by watching him do it, really. But sort of experiencing it with him. But with the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast, I sort of, you know, we have a series, but I never really know where we're going, what's next. Sometimes I just start something and it might end up being a series of 3 or 4 weeks. Sometimes it's a one-off. Today I just decided, basically, within the last 20 minutes or so, that with Home is Where the Hearth Is this week, I'm going to talk about Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, a piece of medieval English literature that some of you may well know. It's best known in J.R.R. Tolkien's translation of it. He was a great admirer of the poem. And I've just taught this, actually, for Red Cultural in Santiago in Chile. Those of you that read the Lady Dow Diary in the Inner Sanctum will know that I, every Friday, or at least most Fridays, I teach an hour-long class, well, an hour and 20 minutes or so after you have questions online to this wonderful cultural group in Santiago in Chile, which I've traveled to Chile under their auspices many times in the past, not for a while, but now we're doing it online. So I teach many courses in literature. We started with Homer, and that's what I'm doing. And so this morning I just finished up Sir Gawain, and we began actually on the Canterbury Tales. So perhaps that will be a future Home is Where the Hearth Is. Without further ado, let's spend some time on Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. I'm going to not particularly hurry. I'm going to take my time because, hey, what's the hurry in the inner sanctum? If we don't get something covered this week, we'll continue next week. That's the way the Home is Where the Hearth Is tends to be. So I'll take a pause for breath and also a pause for a sip of the gin and mineral water that I'm drinking. Okay, so Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Some introductory comments about it. It's contemporary with the Canterbury Tales. So it's written about the same time as Chaucer was writing the Canterbury Tales. But Chaucer was in London, and whoever the Sir Gawain poet is, and we don't really know, he was in the West Midlands of England, or what's now called the West Midlands. In Anglo-Saxon terms, it was Mercia or Mercia. This is where Tolkien considered home. That's where he was raised, in Warwickshire, which is a medieval county in England, and that Warwickshire is the medieval name, but that was part of the Anglo-Saxon kingdom of Mercia. So Gawain is from Mercia, or the West Midlands. Although he's one at the same time, there is a cultural abyss that separates the Gawain poet from Chaucer. And what's really to hammer this fact home, in many respects, Sir Gawain the Green Knight has much more in common with Beowulf than it has with Canterbury Tales. Now, this is astonishing because, of course, as I said, the Canterbury Tales and Sir Gawain the Green Knight were written about the same time, late 14th century in England, and only about 120 miles apart. But in those days, before the onset of the automobile, 120 miles, if most people were travelling on foot, was a considerable distance. And culturally, London was a long way from Mercia or the West Midlands. So actually, although 650 years, think about that. Now, that would be the equivalent of going back to... my math's not good, but 1350s, 1360s, 1370s. In other words, the medieval times from where we are at the moment. That distance, nonetheless, the Beowulf and the Sir Gawain the Green Knight have a great deal in common, because it doesn't follow the continental poetry which Chaucer follows, of having a regular rhyme scheme and a regular meter, in other words, the same number of syllables following a certain pattern on each line. Rather, Sir Gawain the Green Knight follows an alliterative, it's lots of alliteration, and it's about the number of stressed syllables per line. So sometimes the way I talk about this is, an example of this would be the nursery rhyme, Three Blind Mice. So again, let's count the syllables and count the stresses. Three blind mice, three blind mice, see how they run, see how they run. They all ran after the farmer's wife. Did you ever see such a thing in your life? Da 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 da. Three blind mice, three blind mice. So you see there's only three stresses in every single one of those lines, even though the number of syllables differs greatly from three, though I'm guessing is probably about 12. So that's the way that the Anglo-Saxons wrote and recited their poetry. It's about stresses per line, not counting the syllables per line, and per line, and there wasn't a set rhyme scheme. So the Sir Gawain and the Green Knight is much similar to Beowulf, written 650 years earlier in the old English tradition, than the newfangled poetry of Chaucer in London. And again, that's why Chaucer is known as the father of English poetry and the father, and sometimes even the father of the English language, in the sense that what he does in his own poetry is to blend, to meld together the old English, the Anglo-Saxon language, with the Norman French. So, and the modern English is, of course, this melding together of the Germanic Anglo-Saxon and the Latin French. It makes the language rich in many ways, although Tolkien would claim it's actually impoverished the beauty of the original Old English. So, again, to make this clear, just so you understand what's happening, how could this cultural difference of 120 miles be not as great, be greater than the cultural distance of 650 years? Let me explain. And obviously, we're not even going to get to the poem when things are going, given the context for the poem, a history lesson and a cultural history lesson. The English spoke what is now called Old English, Anglo-Saxon. When the Norman Conquest happened, of course, the Norman French spoke French. The twain did meet. So for a couple of centuries after the Norman Conquest, in fact, more than that, for several centuries after the Norman Conquest, the aristocracy spoke French and the peasants spoke English. And never the twain did meet. The scholars wrote and spoke Latin, but they, if they were speaking to their patrons, they would speak French, because that's where the money was coming from. So the Old English, if you like, was a sort of the language of the peasants, and not the language of the court. But as the aristocracy and the royalty acclimatized, as we'd say in British English, acclimated to England, right, to the host culture over a period of a long time, the two started to come together. And in Chaucer, which is late 14th century, so this is 300 years after the Norman Conquest, we see this coming together in his poetry. So that was why, you know, that Sir Gawain is writing in the rustic language of the majority of the ordinary people, not in the language of the elite. So that's why there's this abyss that separates the two poems, even though they were written at the same time. Okay, so that is the introduction We do have another few minutes, so I want to at least start with the poem. So basically, to begin telling us the story, and then we'll obviously continue next time, that Sir Gawain is a member of the court of King Arthur. And as good Christians, as good Catholic Christians, King Arthur and his court and the Round Table, etc., are celebrating Christmas. And then there's a gatecrasher to their Christmas party. This really weird, again, the Anglo-Saxon word for weird, where we get our word weird from, the Anglo-Saxon word weird or weird, W-Y-R-D, means something which is supernatural and ultimately providential. But there's this green knight, and when I say green knight, not green because he's clad in green, although he is, not just because his armour is green, but his skin is green. So it's really weird. And he's huge. He's the tallest man by far, a giant. And he suggests a Christmas game. But this is a somewhat deadly game, because the idea is that he will allow anybody in the court to wield an axe to chop off his head. That they have the first stroke. If they fail to kill him with that first stroke, he then gets a stroke against them. And because of the fact this man's a giant and he's weird, he's got green skin and he's clearly some sort of, you know, supernatural being from the fairy world, shall we say, no one wants to take him up on his offer, on his game. Everyone suspects that something weird is happening, and they're all cowards. Now, of course, this is not good. These are the knights of the Round Table, right? We really understand that Sir Gawain the Green Knight is ultimately about teaching us lessons about chivalry, what it is and what it isn't, and its limitations, and virtue, and the relationship between chivalry and virtue. So, in the end, because all of his knights are cowards, King Arthur himself takes the Green Knight up on his bargain. And of course, it's then Sir Gawain who says he would rather do this on behalf of his king. And he accepts the challenge in humility. So he certainly starts on the right moral foot. He wields the axe and he cuts the Green Knight's head clean off. Victory, perhaps, you might think. But as we suspected, there's something weird going on. So the head literally rolls across the floor. The imagery in the poem is if it's a football, a soccer ball, and the people have to kick it away from their feet as they're sitting, as it rolls across the floor. But then the Green Knight, headless Green Knight, walks and picks his head up. How on earth he knows where his head is another matter. That's only a pedant will ask questions such as that. He walks across, picks his head up, and without putting his head back on his shoulders, actually holds his head in his hand, and his head begins to talk. Very, very weird. And basically says, okay, well, you failed. I am still alive. Therefore, the forfeit is that Sir Gawain must allow his head to be subject to the axe of the Green Knight. However, the Green Knight says, not now. Let's have more fun. You have basically a year and a day. You have till New Year's Day of the following year to actually present yourself at my castle. He didn't tell him where it is. He has to find it, present himself in time for New Year's Day, and then presumably Sir Gawain would have his head chopped off. So on that rather gruesome note, we'll end this week's discussion of Sir Gawain the Green Knight, and we'll continue again next week with the story. And the lessons in terms of moral virtue that the Gawain poet, as a good Catholic medieval Merry Englander, is trying to teach us. So until next week, thanks so much for listening. And until next week, thanks for being a member of the Inner Circle. And Inner Circle. Inner Sanctum. Thanks for being a member of the Inner Sanctum. And goodbye and God bless.